Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. If you like our theme music, you're going to want to listen to this interview as well as the bonus song at the end of our show. It's Michael Santos from the Raunch Tones. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Ladies and gentlemen, today I would like to introduce a very special guest. He's actually my brother, and he is the singer on the CD that my intro song is based from, which is the Raunch Tones. And Michael, what is the name of that CD?
The CD is called More Than Fun.
More Than Fun by the Raunch Tones. My brother Mike, otherwise known as El Roncho, is the singer. And which other instruments do you play on that CD?
Well, I wrote the song, but I play guitar and harmonica.
The reason why my brother is on this show is because for as long as I can remember, he's had an amazing passion for music, and he's not getting any younger. He's in his 50s, and that passion has never faded. I know, I'm sure you love that I called you out like that, blew up your spot.
No, but it's good. You're right, though. It seems, unfortunately, that I'm not getting any younger. My body isn't, anyways.
So why I thought he would be so great for you guys to listen to is because he's been able to, in all different ways, integrate this passion and incorporate it into his life. And I think a lot can be learned, and I think you will enjoy his story. So as you know, I typically start the show with a quote that I've selected for my listener, but my brother, who is a writer and avid reader himself, has many that he connects to. So I asked him to choose one to share with you. So, Michael, can you share your passage with us today?
For me, one of the quotes that I've found that I can relate to goes like this. It's very simple. It's just persistence overcomes all obstacles.
And who said that?
Just now I did. But I really can't tell you. I think I got it from one of my favorite books, Think and Grow Rich. But I like it because it applies to everything. It applied to me getting my wife, to me learning how to play guitar or harmonica. I mean, it applies to everything. When I coach my kids, you know, as far as sports or music, whatever, all it is, you know, the same old rewording of the try again.
Well, and I think what's really great about that also is when it's become so ingrained in your person that you feel like it's so much a part of you that it becomes your own idea, you forget even who said it, is really a telling point.
There's lots of quotes. I mean, I love that the Mark Twain quote, too, that says the difference between the power of the right word and the almost right word is like the difference between the power of lightning and a lightning bug. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of quotes that I love, and I think that's right, too. I think the right thing is much more powerful than the almost right thing. But for me, there's a lot of times in everybody's life, I think, where things don't work out at first, and you have to reevaluate. And if you really want something, you just have to keep at it, and eventually you'll break through. That's the way it's worked for me anyways.
Right. And you know, that's something I talk a lot about here during the interviews, is how you can map your brain to achieve things, and you create a vision, and your brain will subconsciously work yourself towards it. And I think that is true. And it happens all the time without us even realizing it. Once you envision and you continue to work towards something, can you tell us, how did your passion begin? What did it look like for you when it started?
Well, I mean, you're talking about things, you know, as far as mapping things out. I don't think that my love of music was a mapped out thing. From what I'm told, my mom told me when I was very young, I loved music so much that when the TV was on, and let's say it was Walt Disney World or Mutual Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and I'm really dating myself, and only people my age would probably remember those shows, but I mean, I wouldn't watch the program. But then they had all these commercials back then with all these jingles, all these songs, you know, the Oscar Mayer song and songs and jingles for commercials that they would never have now. You know, the Oscar Mayer song was the one that talks about big kids, kids with chicken pox, sissy kids. I mean, those things wouldn't be done now, but the melodies and everything were so catchy that, you know, they stayed with you. But I was told that when I was young, I would just run to the TV and stand, you know, a foot away and just sing along with the commercials. And then as soon as the commercial was over, I'd go away. And then I'd come back when the next singing commercial was, McDonald's jingle or whatever it may be. So, I mean, it happened when I was very young. And I love music from a very young age. I can remember playing air guitar before people called it air guitar.
Right. And then how did you end up taking that to the next level?
Well, what happened, you know, we lived in Massachusetts, and I was fortunate enough to take guitar lessons, and I had this lady guitar instructor, and I had this guitar that mom ordered via catalog because her back was out of commission and she couldn't go shopping. So I had a mail order guitar, and she got me some lessons, and what happened is I didn't really pick up the guitar right away, but it was obvious right away that I could sing. And I sang at a concert that this woman had set up for her students. It was actually in a sanatorium, which at the time, you know, as a 7-year-old kid, I didn't know what that was, but you know, it was pretty scary because mom and dad didn't come, and I had never been around less fortunate people than myself. But that was the first concert I ever played in.
Wait, before you move on, can you just sing one quick line of something, get me in a nice jamming mood?
One quick line to get you in a nice jamming mood?
Yeah, one quick line of something.
I believe my time ain't long.
You got soul, brother.
Yeah, well, that's like an Elmore James song, but okay. He's an old blues guy.
Okay, so go to the next level. What was next?
Well, after that, you know, we moved around so much. We tried to find other guitar instructors that I liked, but they didn't really fit. And, you know, Dad played the harmonica just a little bit. I mean, he didn't play it much, but he always had one. And he wouldn't even share a glass of water with you, let alone share his harmonica with you. But, you know.
For the record, Michael is the oldest of the 5 kids in our family. I'm number 4. Mike is number one.
Yeah, so, I mean, he had this harmonica lying around, and a guitar instructor, I'll never forget, we were living in West Milford, New Jersey, and a guitar instructor came, and he wanted to tune up my guitar, but he didn't have a pitch pipe or anything to tune it to, so he asked if there was a harmonica in the house, and the guy was, you know, this is the early 70s, the guy was kind of a, you know, freaky-deaky, long-haired, hippie-type guy. And I said, yeah, my dad has a harmonica. I went up and got it, and the guy blew in the harmonica to tune the guitar. And I'll never forget when Dad came home and found out that this guy, he saw him leaving, this guy had blown in his harmonica. He did a dance on it. I mean, he stomped it on the porch. It was funny. You know, I don't blame him now that I know, you know, a harmonica is really like a toothbrush. I mean, it's not something you share with just anybody. But yeah, that was pretty funny. But anyways, the long and short is I didn't play music ever again, but I love music and I would sing music. I just never picked up the guitar. And
how old were you at that point?
I was in 4th grade when that happened. Then we moved to Tennessee. And that's where I really got a feel for blues and gospel music, was in Tennessee. And at the time when we were there, that's when Southern rock was really blowing up. That's when Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, when Freebird hit big.
Give me 3 steps of Mr. Give me 3 steps towards the door. That's my singing. You love my singing, I know.
Yeah, I mean, they played that song too. But Freebird really hit. And I can remember, I had called the radio station 18 times to request, and the only reason I remember that is because Dad saw the phone bill, and they were long distance calls to this radio station, and he's like, "That cost us $1.38," and he freaked out. You called them 18 times just to hear this song. But I just love that song, and I still love Lynyrd Skynyrd to this day. And really, Lynyrd Skynyrd is probably what put me in bands, because I was singing a Lynyrd Skynyrd song in college in a public shower in our dorm. And I was singing, I thought I was by myself. There were two other guys, I guess, that were showering in different stalls, but I really didn't know they were there. I think they came later. And then I was singing The Needle in the Spoon, I think, by Lynyrd Skynyrd. I don't know if you ever heard that one.
How does that go?
It goes, "Don't mess with the needle or the spoon. Give your chip to the moon. It's going to take you away." And anyways, I was singing it very loud, much louder than that. I'm drying off. I'm out of the shower. And some guy comes running in, and I had seen him, but I didn't really know him, because I had really only been at the school for it's Kent State University for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. So I didn't know most of the guys in my dorm. It was a pretty big dorm. In fact, Joe Walsh, the famous singer and guitar player from the James Gang and the Eagles, actually lived in that dorm on a different floor when he was a student. But anyways, the long and short is he came running in. He's like, "Hey, man, who's doing that singing?" And I was like, "Oh, no, I woke this guy up," or he was trying to study. I felt like I was going to get crap for it. So I didn't say anything. And he looks around, and the two guys that were showering, we're now done, and we're all kind of drying off. We're all looking at each other, and of course, they didn't want to say that I did it, and I didn't want to say that I did it, but I was like, "Yeah, that was me. Did I wake you up?" And he's like, "No, man, I thought that was great. You got to come to my room at 6 o'clock tonight," and that's really the first group of guys I ever played music with. And that night, in his room, he was a bass player from Ohio. In that room, I learned a lot that night, and I wrote my first song with the band. We wrote a song called The Paper Bag Blues, which was really about the toilet paper and how rough it was at Kent State. It felt like a paper bag. So anyways, yeah, that's how I started. And that's when I realized, I didn't even know that I really loved blues music. So anyways, after we were done kind of jamming, this guy put on a Jimi Hendrix record. And this song came on, and a lot of people may know it now, but I had never heard it before. And you got to remember, this is probably 10 years, 11 years after Hendrix had put it out, maybe even more. And I still hadn't heard it. It's a song called Red House. I asked the guy to play it like two or three times. And I was like, "Man, I love this song." And they were like, "You've never heard this song before?" And I was like, "No, I've never heard it." And I'm like, "I love that." And the guy goes, "You like blues music. That's what you like." He goes, "You're always listening to ZZ Top and George Thorogood and Stevie Ray Vaughan and all these other bands." And it never dawned on me until he said that I love blues music. And he was absolutely right. And that was a night, too. I mean, this was a crazy day. I should have really memorialized it or something, because A, I got in a band. B, I had this epiphany forced on me that it said, "Yeah, you love blues," and they were absolutely right. And then C, they go, when I was singing these songs, they were like, "Well, where's your harmonica?" And I was like, "I don't have a harmonica." And they're like, "All lead singers play harmonica." And I said, "They do not." And they're like, "No, Mick Jagger plays harmonica. Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin plays harmonica. I mean, everybody plays harmonica." And everybody they mentioned that was a lead singer did. And I was like, "Holy crap, I got to get a harmonica."
Don't forget, D, you wrote a song about toilet paper.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that was the first song, too. So, I mean, but, yeah, I don't know why I don't think that was such a big deal. I mean, it was fun, but it really wasn't as life-changing as realizing, holy crap, I like blues more than any other kind of music, But You know, and I still do. I like all music, and this is a quote I heard too, Lynette, and I don't know who said this either, but I agree with it. And I think it applies to any other aspect of life too, if you just change one word. But for me, the quote goes like this, the more you love music, the more music you love. And I think you could say the more you love art, the more art you love. You know, the deeper you get into something, the wider your, I don't know, acceptance or appeal for it becomes, you know?
Or music can just be the metaphor.
Yeah, for me, you know, it definitely is music, but I could see if somebody says, well, hey, the more you love cars, the more you appreciate other cars, the more cars you appreciate.
Or music, I mean, music can represent so much, you know, not just actual literal music. It could be the music of life. It could be liveliness. It can be, you know, metaphorical for whatever it is that surrounds you that you enjoy so much.
Right. Well, all I'm saying is all you have to do is take that word. In my case, it's music. It really does apply to music because at first I was focused on bluesy blues rock music. And I grew the more I recorded, the more I wrote to appreciate other kinds of music. Even if I didn't like the song, I might say, wow, I like the snare sound of that snare drum on this song, even though I might not like this the song itself. Whereas initially, when I first started getting into music, if I didn't like the whole thing, I didn't like it, you know. But after a while, I was able to dissect different songs a little bit and grow to appreciate other forms of music.
So, what were your intentions with music?
I mean, listen, I would come home at high school. And my high school times weren't that great. I mean, in my life, they weren't that great. And I wasn't a happy person, really, I don't think, in those times. And I would come home and I would just turn on FM radio because that's all we had. I mean, you couldn't go on the internet. There was no such thing. I mean, there was a couple strong stations that you could hear in the area. And back then, it was WPLJ. I would just turn the lights off, and the stereo had this eerie kind of green glow to it, the dial of the FM receiver. And it was one of those stereo record player all-in-one deals. And I would just turn on PLJ and I would just sit there and pretend when Foreigner was playing a song or when I heard, you know, Bob Dylan sing a song or something, that that was me. And that was, you know, what high school was like for me.
So you had the big dream. I mean, you had the big
Yeah,
dream.
no, I would just sit there and I didn't, it wasn't really about stardom or richness or any of that. It was just more, I don't want to say it was escapism either. It was just like, oh, that would be cool to be in a basement singing, everybody must get stoned. Ah, you know, I mean, it sounded like fun. And to me, you know, that's what I really wasn't having was fun. And the idea that you could stand and make a loud noise with a guitar in front of people and that they might appreciate that and clap, you know, it was nothing but a dream for me. And it was something that I was never going to do at that point. Because, like I said, I didn't play guitar or anything. I knew I could sing. When I say that, I mean, I knew I was a loud, strong singer, and I knew that other people, of course, in our family were not very good singers. I mean, you heard mom sing, oh my God. But,
Hey, you just heard me sing. What are you
yeah, I
trying
know.
to
I've heard a lot of people sing that I never ever wanted to hear sing. And we were talking about that the other day. I mean, I've been to a couple, hotel bars where people get up in front of a machine and sing, and it really put a
Don't
hurt in my cabeza.
do not act like you didn't like my karaoke business and the times that you would fill in and be sound man, even though you said to me it hurts your cabeza.
It didn't just, that was like an understatement. No, it was fun and it was good to see other people having fun, you
Well,
know.
and that's the point, because for some people, that's their passion. It doesn't mean that you have to be Bon Jovi. It just means, and I see so many, I was saying to you the other day, I see so many connections between what I did as a karaoke MC host and what I'm doing right now, in the fact that I truly just loved that people were living, you know, and they were taking risks and they were just letting their hair down, letting it fly. And it was awesome. Now you have performed in a lot of different places. I mean, you've done the quintessential artist band trek, and you've played in small venues and large venues. What would you say was your, any kind of challenge that you've had along the way, or any disappointment in this process for you of where you wanted to go and how you, where you ended up?
Right. Well, like I said, it started out because it was more of like a fun kind of dream. And then I never thought I could do it. You know, I just didn't think that it would ever, you know, like I would sit there and lay there with my eyes shut thinking that, you know, here I am singing Werewolves of London or whatever the song is I'm listening to on the radio. But I never thought that would actually be me. And the fact that over time it became clear that, you know what, that could be me. I, you know, I was at a school, and I told your husband this. I was at a school and I went skiing. I skipped college one day and went skiing. This is in New Hampshire. Probably the second biggest day, probably musically for me. And again, I don't even know what date it was, but it was certainly winter. And I'm at the ski area called Crotchet Mountain. And I've never skied there before. I get on a chairlift and, you know, it's probably the second or third run. And I had gotten separated from my buddies that I went with. And I get on a chairlift with somebody else, a total stranger, somebody I don't know. We're going up the chairlift, and all of a sudden I hear this music playing, you know? And this was, again, before Walkmans, before iPods, before any of that. And I was like, I had seen ski competitions, like freestyle competitions, where they had piped music on the mountains for the competition, you know? And I thought that was really great, you know, because I love music.
And skiing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love skiing too. But I mean, so I'm on the mountain and I look at this guy, this 40-year-old man, and I say, wow, that's so great that they're piping music onto the mountain. And he looked at me and it was really a scary situation for him. He looked at me as if I was crazy. And he said, hey, they're not piping any music onto the mountain. There is no music on this mountain. And I'm like, you don't hear that music playing. He's like, no, I absolutely do not hear that music playing. I put my hands over my ears, Lynette, and I could hear the music louder than when my hands weren't on my ears. And I realized I had music in my head. And I really, really got scared. You know, because I had taken a psych class and I realized that, you know, schizophrenia in adults, you know, doesn't happen or in people until, you know, they're becoming young adults. I got so scared that I went to my RD in my building because I knew that he was a psych major, and his name was Dave. And I said, Dave, I can we talk? I mean, is it okay if I close the door? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he loved music too. He was a big Mott the Hoople fan. I told him what happened. And he said, Mike, you could be overreacting. He handed me this huge book called Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Interviews or something of that nature. A hard cover book with all the greatest interviews that Rolling Stone magazine had done with the biggest artists in the world. And he goes, you're going to want to read the Dylan or Keith Richards interview, you know, I mean, among others. And when I read those interviews, they were very clear on the fact that they heard music in their head and that they tried to put it down as soon as they heard it. So then I was starting to get the idea that maybe I was supposed to be into music, that it wasn't an accident, it wasn't just a hobby, and maybe I should actively, you know, try and, you know, I not pursue it, but actively write down what I hear, not freak out when I hear the music, you know what I mean? It was really, like I said, it was sketchy at first.
The mountain was talking to you.
Well, I mean, music was talking to me, and I had music in me, and it was trying to get out.
Being in nature like that often brings out things within us that, you know, is clouded or clogged when we're in the daily grind.
You know what I thought it was? For me, I was no longer in the environment I was in at home. I wasn't, you know, like I said, I wasn't really, I mean, my childhood was not bad to by any means, you know, and I feel very fortunate. It was just, I moved around a lot, so much so, I didn't really have any strong friends. So going to college, living with guys, kind of gave me that where I never had that. And being out on a sunny, bright day skiing was a happy experience. And I took it to mean, you know, when I thought about it more deeply, that when I was happy, the music presented itself, my music. It wasn't anybody else's song that I was hearing. It actually sounded like a concert to me where I was singing.
Michael, you took all of these experiences and all the shows and that you performed with different people. You've worked with a bunch of different people. You came out with one CD and you've collaborated on other pieces of work, correct?
Right. Well, actually, I was, and I've been very fortunate with some of the people I've been able to play with. I mean, but the Raunch Tone record, I wrote and produced that, and that was on a cheap local label that ended up not paying for all of the recording. But anyways, the guitar player on that, Neil Casale, is a big musician. I mean, he's played with, right now he's playing with Chris Robinson, who was the lead singer in the Black Crowes. And he's the guitarist and backup vocalist on the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. He's also in Hardworking Americans, which is another very strong band. But he also played with Ryan Adams and the Cardinals. And I mean, people who know music know him. And he's just a really close friend. And I was very fortunate to have him on that recording and play a lot of gigs. Like Aretha Franklin said in the Blues Brothers movie, a lot of two-bit sleaze and dives.
I've been at a few of those shows.
Yeah, and you've been at some of the good ones, too. You were at a blues cruise that was really a lot of fun, too. And, well, there's been a lot. You know, I've been very fortunate. I've opened in a two-man blues act called the Curb Howlers. I got to open for some of my blues heroes, like Pine Top Perkins, who was Muddy Waters' longtime piano player, for Johnny Clyde Copeland, who's no longer with us. You know, he was a great guitar player. You know, I've gotten to do a lot. I've played in New York City a little bit. I've gotten to play all over New Jersey, you know. And it started out slow. It started out in cover bands before there was a name called classic rock. Before that genre had been set up, we were doing that, you know, in the early 80s. I was playing classic rock, you know, with Stones and Hendrix and all kinds of music, along with some modern bands that fit the styles that I like to play, you know. But I had a lot of great players that were with us. The first drummer I ever played with still drums. He's a percussionist in the Miami New Age Symphony Orchestra. A lot of the guys that I played with from the very beginning really shared the same passion for music that I had. It was weird that we all hooked up and everybody still does it.
So what would you say that you've learned about yourself in this process?
Well, I mean, I've learned a lot about myself, and unfortunately, some of that I can't get back. One thing, you know, had I known what I know now, I would have started a lot earlier. You know, I would have started really taking steps to follow what I really felt, because I just, you know, I felt like, hey, I'm just some jamoke in New Jersey who nobody is ever going to want to hear a song from me or see me do anything. But music, learning music itself, the actual, you know, technique of it is the thing that was hard for me. It didn't come naturally to me to just pick up an instrument and play, where, you know, I've met many people, and my son is one of them, who just instantly can latch on to stuff, and he could play any instrument, you know, and I'd like to think I had something to do with that.
When I type up the show notes, when we put up the show notes for this episode, I'll definitely put a link so viewers can see one of Tom's videos on YouTube.
That's great. But I mean, as far as the discography of the stuff I've done, the Rhonestone record is a big thing I think I'm the most proud of. But I played on one of Neil's albums called Basement Dreams, I think. And I played a song called Run and Hide. I played harmonica on that. I've been on two compilations for the Silk City CD record company, and there were live recordings at the Great Notch Inn. One is called Standing Room Only, Songs from the Last Roadhouse, and the Rhonestones have two original songs in that. And then one is called Santa Has Left the Building, and that is like a Christmas album. And the Rhonestones have two songs on that, but I'm also on another band in that recording. And that one's called Hot Foot Patter, and that's like a two-man group. Anyways, one of the songs was an original, and one was kind of a cheeky cover of 12 Days of Christmas.
Well, you know what? You'll be part of the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook group. And I wouldn't be surprised if people want to reach out to you and talk about their journey, where they're at in the stage. Now, what kind of advice have you received from anybody along the way that's kind of stuck with you?
What about music?
Yeah, about your journey, your direction, what you're doing, your goals.
Some of the greatest stuff I treasure, anyways. Pine Top Perkins, I got to talk to him closely, and like I said, he's at the time he was up there, but he gave me his recipe for cooking catfish, which I thought was a treasure. You know, one is watch your money. Another is just be true to yourself. Don't try to be something you're not musically, you know, and stick to your strengths. And I don't think anybody ever had to tell me to stick to my strengths. I think, you know, I definitely have. And I think this is could be said for everybody. You know, we have our limitations in everything, whatever you're doing. And I think in music, anyways, the limitations you have actually contribute to your style, your feel, the way you are as a musician. And I think that's the same with people in any endeavor. And it's helped me appreciate the individuality of every person. Because when you hear somebody play an instrument, you hear three guitar players play the same song. They're not going to sound the same. It makes you appreciate the human element in everything, I think being a musician, anyways, does for me.
Right. That's really good information and insight. Can you tell us, has there been a book that you've read along the way that's helped you out?
Musically, I would say that, you know, they're really, I read a great book on Hank Williams that I thought was really interesting book, where I learned about his life. But as far as being a musician, really the only thing that I could say that's going to help a person be a better musician is playing more music. And the only thing that's going to help a person write better songs is writing more songs. And I write songs to this day. I wake up at 3 in the morning sometimes and have a song in my head, and I wake up and I write it down. Of course, it freaks out the dog and my wife, and my kids will come down because they heard a noise. Because if my wife, you know, tells me to, I'll leave the bedroom, I'll go downstairs and I'll write it. Yeah, it's something that's in me, and I can't stop. And I have garbage bags filled with songs. And some of the songs I write, you know, I don't know where they're coming from. Like one of the songs on the Rhonestone record, I was telling your husband that I really wrote that as an idea. My kids were very young at the time, as an idea for a song on Sesame Street. Got to have a wheel or wheel to keep rolling. You know, if you picture that with the right visual backdrop, you could see that that's really teaching a kid that, you know, wheels are used in all types of transportation. And if you look at the words of that song, you'll hear it.
Wheel on a taxi, wheel on a bus, carry you for money if you gotta know.
There's a lot of songs that I didn't know where they came from. Like, I didn't know where Train to Your Heart. I mean, I know how it happened, but I, you know, the lyrics. But the music, you know, I had the music before the lyrics. And Kenny and I, this guy was who was a good friend of mine. We were in Philadelphia. We were trying to come back. And we were in traffic. And this train smoked by us. And we're stuck in traffic. And I'm watching the train go north. And I said, you know, that train, it's just like how Robin's going to feel. You know, my girlfriend at the time. Because she wanted to come to Philly but couldn't. And I felt like, you know, I missed the train to her heart by not being able to take her down to Philadelphia, because I knew, you know, if we went down to Philly to do what Kenny and I did that day, it would have brought us closer. And that's where the lyrics, anyways, for Train to Your Heart started.
It's late at night, you're in your bedroom.
Born.
You remember when we were writing that song?
Headed for a Hangover. That's a good song.
Yeah, we were just driving down a road, and it was the same road we had happened to be going to a big New Year's Eve party. And I said, the last time we were going down this road, we were headed for a hangover. And there you go. We started goofing around with a song right there.
That's right. Is there another resource, something more contemporary that people who are listening can look into, that you would recommend music-based?
Well, I'll tell you right now, if you really want to learn music, and I can only really speak about blues, if you really want to find out about blues music, A, go see blues bands. B, there are a lot of resources on the internet. If you want to learn how to play an instrument or a part to a song, I mean, there are many, many resources on the internet that can help you. All you have to do is type in the song title in YouTube, and chances are that somebody will be there to help you out. It could teach you anything from how to crochet to or show you anything. But like I said, the only way you're really going to get it, and musically anyways, is by playing over and over with groups of people and watching people who are more advanced than you play, you know. But it's really the actual persistence of playing day after day, working on something, listening to something, and swinging that bat, trying to hit a homer. You know, that's all I can say.
Okay, so this part of the show is called Motivate Me, Express to Success. Most important part of the show, because it's where we talk about how to envision, explore, and execute. So 1 minute responses. If I said to you, how can the listeners envision being a musician, what would your response to that be?
Well, I think you use your imagination, but it's got to be a passion. It's got to be inside. It can't be programmed in you. And I don't know if it's the smartest career path or something that people should want to aspire to, because it's never been harder with the raising of the drinking age and cutting cigarette smoking out of bars. I mean, playing locally in as a musician has never been tougher.
Okay. How could they go about exploring this for themselves?
Well, I mean, if they have the passion for it, the only real thing I can tell them is don't second guess yourself. If you really love music, it's a gift. Even though nobody listening probably has ever heard of me, I've been able to pass my love for music and my gift of being able to play music moderately well to my family, to my friends, and my kids enjoy it. I never thought when I initially learned to play music that I would be playing songs for little kids dancing in a living room, you know, and sharing a wonderful time. But that's what's happened.
Okay, so to execute it, step one would be?
To just don't second guess yourself and do exactly what you want to do. If you want to play the piano or whatever, then step one would be get a piano. Step two would be mess around on it and believe that you can learn it. And step three would be find ways to learn it, whether it be through the internet or a teacher or a friend that knows something about it, whatever it may be, full speed ahead.
El Rancho, if life is truly a process, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Dream big.
Where do I see myself 5 years from now?
How do you see music still being a part of your life?
Oh, it's never gonna stop. I mean, you know, if I hear a song that I like, my hair stands up. It's not something I can stop. I feel actually, I don't know, handicapped in some way that I feel it so strongly, but you know, because other people certainly don't. But I'm starting to play again, and now that my children, I've got one that's going to go to college. I got another that's really a grown woman who's got a couple more years in high school, but I don't have to worry about them, say, on the weekends anymore. So I'm going to start playing more. I may even record some music.
That'd be amazing. And being a part of the Ultimate Support System, you can put your stuff out there and people can know what you're doing and check it out. That's really what I want for everybody, just to have a network of people to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. What do you think? Check it out. Cause some traffic. Get together, you know? What closing advice would you give listeners?
People love music. They should buy it. They should support it. The idea that intellectual property should be free or something like that offends me. Musicians practice all the time. They have to buy their instruments. They have to buy strings for guitars or harmonicas or whatever. I think they should support it. They should not believe that it's something to be swapped for free and something that's not actually earned by hard work and sweat. And I feel like they should definitely, if they love music, support it, go after it.
Okay. And to get you on Facebook, your name is?
Michael Santos.
Okay. Santos. Listeners, this part of the show is the go do for the day. So my advice to you, what I would like you to go do is simply put on a song that makes you feel something. It could be something that inspires you. It could be something that makes you a little sad or sentimental or happy, and just truly listen to it. Let it hit your core. That's your job today, listeners. Michael Santos, El Rancho, the Ranch Tones. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know listeners are going to get a lot out of what you've had to say. I know I learned a lot about my brother today, so this has been a great experience for me as well. And I really want to thank you for coming on. I know you're kind of a quiet guy, so I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Love you, brother.
I love you too, honey.